Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the second season of Almost Paradise. This is on Freevee, which is Amazon's free service.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep track. This was originally on something else in 2020.
I think it was IMDb TV, which was Amazon's free service at the time.
I was thinking it was TNT or TBS or something. I forget.
Oh, did it air on something?
They originally were on something.
Oh.
Wasn't going to get picked up. A streaming service expressed interest, ran the first season to see if it got enough interest to do a second season. It did. Now, granted, 2020 to 2023, season one, season two, a part of that pandemic, Christian Kane, the lead, couldn't get back over to the Philippines. It's all shot over there. And we did an episode on the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't remember the first season, the basic premise is you've got an ex-DEA agent played by Christian Kane from Leverage, Librarians, Angel. I mean, he's got a huge body of work. And he gets betrayed by his DEA partner and basically winds up out of the DEA on a medical discharge because he's got severe stress problems and stuff like that.
He's a walking heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah. So the whole first season was, is he going to basically, you know, kill himself by having, you know, a stroke or, you know, whatever it would be. And he winds up in the pilot episode interfering with a local police bust and winds up helping them.
Mm-hmm.
Winds up partnering with them over the course of the season. All of that continues here. So the core cast is Christian Kane as Alex Walker, Art Acuna as Ernesto, I forget his last name.
Alamares.
Alamares, thank you. Then we've got Samantha Rochelle as Kai Mendoza.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the actor's name who plays the chief, Ike Ocampo.
Noni, I can't say his last name, I'm sorry.
Everybody on the main cast, other than Christian Kane, is Filipino. They've really done a lot of casting over there, for the most part. And I find it interesting, the intentional exception where they go elsewhere for casting. Have you noticed all the bad guys are not Filipino?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the thugs, some of the street level, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. But the big-time bad guys.
But the big-time bad guys, always mm-hmm. elsewhere, European or whatever. And that's intentional. The whole, not the whole point, but one of the points of the show, Dean Devlin, who is in charge of Electric Entertainment, the producer of the show and one of the co-creators of it and directed a number of episodes, is part Filipino. And pride of his homeland and all that kind of stuff, he wanted to showcase it.
Yeah.
Because so many times when we see it in the movies, it's, oh, it's poverty. It's, oh, it's so bad. And we're seeing kind of the nicer sides of it.
Yeah.
Or the fuller picture of it.
We're seeing the beauty of the landscape.
Yes.
And really the beauty of the expanded families
the
or
people,
the extended
the culture,
families.
Yeah. When Christian came was being interviewed in a few different places. So I've watched mm-hmm. a few of the YouTube videos lately. He equates the show to a little bit of like Magnum P.I., the original one, where, you know, Hawaii, there's the showcase, and here it's definitely the Philippines. He kind of considers that, you know, the star of the show or equal footing with all the other characters and such. And also part Rockford Files.
Because
here's a guy who's kind of, you know, tripping his way through life, but ends up smelling like a rose through no fault of his own almost.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lot of fun. It definitely fits both of those categories. I mean, there's an aspect of watch the show for, you could argue, a standard procedural just set in a really cool locale. But it's got a sense of humor. It's got a good sense of adventure and is kind of balancing all of those aspects fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian Kane had flat out said in one of the interviews, it's not going to win awards. It's not that kind of a show. But people like it.
It's light entertainment. I mean, some of the humor for me comes from, like, the character Rita,
mm-hmm.
who's, what, 10, 11 years old?
Yeah, she's the child of one of the maids at the hotel where Alex has bought the gift shop
yeah.
and is running it. and ineptly, and she's basically running it for him.
Yeah, she's basically hired herself to run his gift shop. She tells him when he owes her for overtime and stuff, and he's become a surrogate father to her.
Yeah, definitely a father figure of sorts, and it grounds his character in a really nice way.
Yeah.
And it shows, I don't want to say the softer side or whatever, but it shows a different side of him than when he's beating the tar out of some of these thugs or whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's got the action quotient. It's got the drama, you know, the procedural mystery side. It's got the comedy. But because it's not focusing on any one of those, it's not going to win awards as the best comedy or the best drama or, you know, whatever. Although it did win a People's Choice Award, apparently.
Oh, I believe that.
Because, again, it's a fun show.
Well, it doesn't fit most of the molds you're expecting it to go into. It doesn't fit the Law and Order mold. There were one or two episodes that were more akin to Leverage than most.
Well, there was one. They definitely were riffing off the whole Leverage of let's go steal a casino. He walks out. Why did he just walk out?
Yes.
And it's, hey, I'm masterminding and a few things like that.
Yeah.
And it's, if you know his character in Leverage, if you're familiar with the show, you get all those things. If you don't, it's still kind of funny.
Yes.
It's, yeah, it definitely doesn't fit the mold. The closest thing I would equate it to would be kind of the 80s shows of Simon and Simon, Riptide, again, Magnum P.I. and stuff. The Stephen J. Cannell kind of shows.
Well, and that's a great example because, like, with the A-Team, there was always that personal connection or that, you know, 2 degrees of for how they got the case.
The hero gets invested in the outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot here. Well, like with the first one, which was the cross that had gone missing. And it's Ernesto wants to donate time to help fix up the church that's been burned down.
Yeah. Well, and that was funny because one of the guest stars there was from The Ark.
Yes.
Which is another Dean Devlin show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny at first, because the guy sounded totally different. It's like, if I didn't know better, it's the same guy. And I'm like, actually, I don't know better. It is the same guy.
Yes.
And then at the end, when he drops the one accent and goes to the other, it's like, see?
Yes. So
that was funny.
Well, the problem there, though, was that they fell into the rule of the most famous guest star did it.
Yes. Well, speaking of guest stars, one of the other ones they had in 3 of the 10 episodes was Donnie Brasco, who was the voice of Prince Zuko on Avatar The Last Airbender.
Mm.
He was also in Hook. He's done a few other things. Great actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was playing a bad guy here, and he was really well used. He was originally set up as, oh, this guy is back. And it's like, I don't think we'd seen him before. But then he shows up later, and he's there for the finale and stuff.
Well, and I have to admit, where he decided to hide out was hilarious, given the...
Yes, he's known for waterboarding. He's hiding at a water park.
Yes.
And that episode was kind of funny because Alex's ex-wife shows up with new husband, a potential new husband in tow.
Yes.
And all of the comedy there, the mistaken identity, if she booked the hotel under Miss Alex Walker because that's what the credit card was, because the patriarchal society... He's standing there. The thugs are looking for Alex Walker. It must be the soon, you know, the prospective husband and stuff. So Alex has to rescue him. There are certain things that on the surface almost feel like an I Love Lucy-ish episode plot line.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, you've kind of got the two cops playing the Ricky and Fred. Oh, they're at it again. And, you know, the comedy ensuing, or the wackiness ensuing in this case with the Alex character instead of Lucy. And to me, the parallel there goes further in so much as I think there are certain de facto rules, at least at Electric Entertainment, for how to write for Christian Kane. Because he's really good at he's about to lose his cool, but doesn't.
Yes.
And in a comedic way, he's not good with technology, he's a little out of touch, and there are similarities between his characters, particularly here and Elliot Spencer in Leverage. They're not the same character by a wide margin.
No, but like when the kid Rita takes the phone, answers the phone call because he's like, yeah, right, I'm with a customer, what do I care? She starts talking and all of a sudden he realizes who it is and he leaps over the counter where he's checking someone out, runs over and takes the phone.
Well, and then gets tongue-tied.
Yes.
You know, and the whole scene there was funny, and that young actress played it so well.
Yes.
And it's just a combination of well-written material given to people who can really make the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times where, okay, Christian Kane's going to kind of do his thing. The guys at Electric Entertainment have worked with him on enough shows for long enough. I mean, again, Leverage, Librarians, this, Leverage again, this again, you know, kind of a deal. They understand what will work with him, what won't. He understands how they're going to write for him, how to play it. But also the local talent they've got.
Mm-hmm.
The two they've got for the cops, really strong actors.
They are, yeah.
And they can play the Alex is being Alex again really well of he's going to go after these guys. There's nothing we can do to stop him. He shouldn't do it. He's going to, but okay, let's acknowledge it. Let's deal with it. Let's move on.
What cracks me up with the one who plays Ernesto is when he takes off his glasses.
Mm.
It's very much a...
It's a Bruce Lee almost. Kind of.
Yes.
It's Clark Kent turning into Bruce Lee almost at that moment.
Yes, yes.
And there was one time, it's like, he's about to get into a fight. Oh, you don't want to do it. He's taking the glasses off. Somebody else comes in.
Yeah.
Defuses the situation. Glasses go back on.
Yes, yes. And it was great.
And he has the ability to play the, I'm going to kick your butt like Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And the facial expressions, the gestures of you don't mess with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He can also play the, he's just the pal next door.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of versatility and fun to watch. And the one who plays Kai Mendoza, she is very, the character is very clearly bemused by what's going on at times.
Mm-hmm.
Of, I know this isn't going to end well for Alex. I'm going to try not to laugh. I'll probably fail, you know, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
They're all clearly friends.
Yeah.
And there's a good chemistry between the characters that I've got to imagine reflects the chemistry with the actors.
Well, and one of the great scenes I felt for Kai was when Alex comes to them at the police station and he's like, we're going to rob a casino. And she's like, you do realize we're in a police station.
Yes, yes. This is not a place to be doing it. I thought that was a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, the Leverage riffs and stuff. But also... seeing the characters kind of out of character, you know, Kai playing the, you know, cocktail hostess at the casino and stuff, and seeing them in a different mode. Likewise, when they had the episode where they go to a private island for a couple's retreat.
Yes. Yes.
And she's, you know, got the almost flower children kind of look to her.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's just kind of wide-eyed and naive sounding and stuff. Until it's like, okay, let's figure out who did it. They do the makeshift murder board. They've got little salt and pepper shakers for here's where everybody is and stuff. And just the crazy riff on a police procedural with that one.
Well, I loved when, because that one, they're basically infiltrating a cult.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the cult leader invites her to come see him late at night.
Well, and she's already, I mean, they knew this was going to be the case, but she's already told Alex, major predatory vibes off this guy.
Yeah.
She gets called in. He starts making the move.
Well, and Christian Kane is right outside.
Yes. He's not going to let anything happen.
No. And I just loved both sides of that scene. I loved how he's like, I'm going to eavesdrop, and I don't think she's going to need me, but I'm going to be here in case.
Ready to jump in when needed, but not a second sooner.
Yes, yes. And then I love how she handles it inside, and she literally takes him down to the ground.
Well, because the guy's like, oh, are you one of the ones who's going to struggle, and starts to make a move on her. She literally flips him over, slams him on the ground, and says, no, I'm the kind of girl who's going to do this.
Yes, yes.
And there's no damsel in distress or anything of the sort there.
No. And then when she, you know, storms out and Christian Kane comes up behind her, they have this great conversation.
Yes. Yes.
And it was just beautiful.
Ton of fun. Well, and that was also the episode where they brought Lockwood back.
Oh, yes.
He was the, what agency was he from? We'd seen him last season when he had to come check on something.
Uh-huh.
And they got stuck trapped in like a flooding bank vault or something like that.
The jail cell. The downstairs. Jail cell.
Yes, that's what it was.
It flooded, yeah.
They were in there and the police station got taken over.
Uh-huh.
He's there now on a vacation. We'd seen him in a previous episode.
For a phone call.
For a phone call. And clearly they shot that at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a deal. But here he's vacationing over there. He's brought his would-be bride or whatever, but she goes and runs off with the
masseuse
or something like that. He goes to the couple's retreat on his own, and we get this whole little side story of his little adventures and stuff. It so reminded me of the coroner on Psych.
Yes, yes. There was an aspect of he was so not needed for the episode, but he was so darned entertaining.
They could have done almost anything else with the subplot, and it probably would have been Ernesto on the boat that had broken down.
Yeah, and I mean, we were getting that, too.
We just got a token amount of that.
True, true.
I think they could have done a little bit more on that if they had needed to.
Yeah.
But doing this approach, again, added a lot of humor to the episode.
I mean, Lockwood went native.
Yes. It was a ton of fun, and they really balanced, again, a procedural narrative that holds together. It's not telegraphed, other than most famous guest star sometimes does it.
Yes.
It's fun. That part is satisfying.
The best example of not telegraphed was the second episode where they get the coin, I guess it is, that's the entrance ticket to the club.
Oh, yes, the Fight Club episode.
Yes.
That one looks like it's going to go a certain way. We get in, it does a sharp turn. There's another one where Kai's about to just crack up.
Yes.
And again, she sells those scenes. She does a terrific job.
Yeah.
And then when we do get the fight scenes, all three of the leads hold their own on those really well.
Yeah.
And there's a fair amount of stunts on this. So from just a fight scene perspective, it's satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got the humor, it's got the procedural, and it's just, again, a really good balance of that. And in a different way, say, than Leverage.
Because
Leverage would do a little fight scene here or there, showcasing Elliot or something, but that wasn't something you expected every episode.
No.
Whereas here, it's pretty much going to be every episode.
Yeah.
It's, again, they came back for a second season.
Here, I'd say it's more of a team fight scene. Not always, but frequently.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. There are some times where we'll cut between a few different fights.
That's true, yeah.
Somebody's chasing somebody else down or whatnot.
Yeah.
I think every one of the leads has had a chance to have a solo fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's Alex's show, so yeah, he gets most of them. But Kai's gotten a few. Ernesto has certainly gotten a couple. And we get to know these characters a lot better. We go to Ernesto's place for a bit.
I was about to say the World War II flashback episode. Well, that was beautiful in that respect.
The episode starts with somebody interviewing a vet. And I'm like, gosh, I wonder if this is going to be a period piece thing where we see the leads in a different setting.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we do.
Yeah.
But not the whole episode. It's intercut with what's happening present day.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically had an excuse to get Alex out of the gift shop for a bit. It's about to fall down with termites and stuff. Needs to be tended. So he's camping out with Ernesto's family. They've got a bigger place. He's never been to it. He winds up saying Ernesto's grandfather from getting killed.
Yeah.
Off goes into the adventure. Why was he getting targeted to be killed, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And it balanced the two present day pastime plot line really well. They dovetailed excellently. Seeing the characters in a little bit of a different setting was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good one for Kai.
Well, and I mean, it went differently than I expected in terms of there are a lot of Filipinos in the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking more current story than World War II.
Yeah. Well, and we're getting to the point where doing World War II stories are getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
Particularly if you need somebody living that was in World War II.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good episode. It was a nice change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the 10 episodes, they all had the same sort of style and feel in so much as it's recognizably the same show, but also unique enough style and feel in each of the ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the waterboarding one, I think that was also the one that had the dance-off, essentially.
Yes, that was hilarious.
And we get to this one scene where we're inside a Filipino prison. There are two groups of inmates kind of facing off. And the guards are like, oh, they're at it again. And see a bunch of guards rush out into the yard where all this is happening. And then we hear a dance music. The guards are whipping out their phone and they all break into dance out there.
It's like a dance flash mob thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like that was just so over the top, but it was funny.
It worked because of the payoff at the end.
Well, not only the payoff at the end of that episode, but some of those characters were used later in the season.
Yes.
And there's an episodic nature to the show, but a serial narrative as well.
Yeah.
Where a few things set up here, they pay off later. It's clearly not a case where it's just, oh, well, we just need 10 episodes, we can do them in any order, doesn't matter, it's all episodic. It's not that way at all. Each one has its own beginning, middle, and end of its thing. It's satisfying in and of itself. Mm-hmm. If you watch the full season, you get more out of it.
Well, and as much as it's light, humorous entertainment, they do things like the cyanide fishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which...
Well, that was a Romeo and Juliet kind of a story.
Yeah, totally.
But adding the cyanide fishing, who was really behind the killing and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
and it set certain expectations with the Romero and Julie or whatever the characters' yeah. names were. So it's clearly they want us thinking in this direction. And that's good for a skeleton of a story, but they had enough meat behind it
mm-hmm.
that it paid off well.
Well, and just the fact that this new threat, if you will, of food poisoning in terms of people are using cyanide to shock fish.
Yes,
so they
to go
can
get the
exotic fish,
yeah, for aquariums or something.
Yeah, so they can slow them down so they can catch them, and not really thinking about the fact that fish that are being caught for food
yep.
well, are ingesting it.
What I loved about that is it had started with Alex having bought a boat. He's going to do charter stuff. Boat needs a little work, but it'll be okay. He's got a mechanic. The mechanic is the one who winds up getting framed for murder or whatever. So Alex's whole reason to get the guy out is because he needs somebody to fix his boat. And again, that almost goes into the I Love Lucy mentality writing.
Well, and it started with what was practically a love sonnet for the boat. And yeah. then we see the boat. And Christian Kane sold the, you know, if you could see the boat through my eyes.
Yeah.
And then we see the boat and I'm like, oh, I'm not seeing it through your eyes.
They've definitely got a vision for how this show, what they want out of this show.
Yeah.
I think it's coming across clear. I think mm-hmm. it's coming across successfully.
Yeah.
It was, again, a significant wait between the first season in 2020 and this one in 2023. I don't know for certain they're getting a third season, but I really hope they do.
Oh, I do too.
They left it on a note where if they don't, it's okay. They ended cleanly.
Yeah.
But also ended on a note where they could very easily keep and should keep going for more.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing the story set in a different part of the world with different kinds of characters. It does some of the same sort of things you could do if it was set in LA or anywhere else, but also a few stories that take a very different tone because they're set there.
Well, and one of the things I like that veers away from the you could do it if you were in LA, etc., is you get the fishing village stories,
yep.
but you also get the, wow, is Mactan some kind of big metropolitan area in some of those establishing shots.
We get some of the big city stuff. We got a casino episode or two.
Yeah.
We get, again, the private island resort.
Yeah. Well, and he basically lives at a resort.
Yeah.
Because he lives inside the gift shop, which is just hilarious to me.
It allows for a lot of different settings and locations
mm-hmm.
while still feeling like it's, you know, the same place.
Yeah.
And it's a different set of things than we would normally get out of any production, be it done out of LA, Toronto, Vancouver, or any of the other major places they shoot stuff.
Yeah.
And they do a really good job with the aerial shots, the setting of the scene, and leveraging the venue they've got.
Yeah. And they poke fun at expectations. And I think the best example to me of that was in the Ghost Month episode, where they're going to go to the equivalent of a seance, and it's, you know, how'd you find out about her? 5-star reviews on Yelp.
Yeah. Yeah. They know it's a modern show. And
yeah.
Yeah. That one was clearly kind of a Halloweenish sort of episode, but without being cliche.
A little bit Halloween, a little bit New Orleans.
Yeah.
And it was entertaining, had some good twists at the end, and had that just a little bit spooky. Mm-hmm. And I loved how the guy whose life was saved summed up everything.
Yeah. It covers, again, a lot of ground in the 10 episodes. Yeah. None of them were bad by any stretch. They were all entertaining. Each, again, had their own little personality to mm-hmm. them and such. So I appreciate all of that. And it does get to a point where some of these other shows of this ilk of, again, the equivalent of a Private Eye show or something like that. It's not exactly that because he's not a Private Eye. But we've seen those kinds of shows ad nauseum over the decades.
Yeah.
And there's certain, okay, we've done this story, let's do it again. And this time it's in San Diego or it's in LA, but it's not visually different.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I like that they do at times, like when we first see in the finale, like the prison, and they've done this a number of other times, they'll have big text on the screen identifying it's the so-and-so prison, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's set as if it is like Hollywood Hill sign letter,
yeah.
size letters in the setting kind of
yeah,
a deal.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what they would do in My Life is Murder
yes.
out of New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it's a little thing, but it gives the show a little bit more flavor and stuff than it would if it was just, okay, here's the standard white text on the screen,
mm-hmm.
and we see the stuff behind it. Here it's in the shot.
Yeah.
And it's not over the top. It's not interrupting or...
No, but it fits the personality of the show.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. again, the show has a good personality without being an overstated personality.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope it's doing well enough for Freevee and stuff that they keep going.
Me too.
Because I think they've certainly got more story to tell. I think they've got a solid production crew, staff, cast, writing, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched a lot of what Electric Entertainment has done and enjoyed, I think, everything I have watched.
Yeah.
And that includes, again, Leverage, Librarians, Almost Paradise, Arc. I'm trying to think what else they've done.
That's all that comes to mind.
That's all that comes to mind. But I think they may have done one or two other things. Dean Devlin's done other things.
Yeah.
But again, great show. It's nice. It's light. It's easy fare. So it's not something you got to worry about. Oh, it's going to weigh me down. Nothing like that at all. It's something you can toss on if you just want to watch something while you're eating or something like mm-hmm. that. I think it's suitable for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
So many shows are not these days.
Yeah.
And again, I am looking forward to more seasons of this.
Me too.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.